remember, it's a win-win. Do your internal prep, like it's what they say is the success is in the preparation, success in the planning. Mm. Do your planning and then make sure you're presenting it in a way that presents it as a win to them. And yes, you can achieve this virtually over the internet, but you're going to have 100% better results.
Hi, folks. It's the Quiet Light Podcast with Joe Valley and Mark Dapps. Quiet Light Brokerage is the leader in helping entrepreneurs build, buy, and sell their online businesses. Since 2007, we have helped thousands buy and sell online businesses. And now, we're putting our extensive knowledge in your earbuds with our trademark relentless honesty and a few laughs along the way.
The man who is coming here tonight is kind and funny. He's got the most wonderful sense of humor.
But he's not here.
And now, here's Joe and Mark.
Shortly after you buy a business, you're obviously looking for any opportunities to increase your return on investment. Sometimes that's through growth. Sometimes it's through different ways of cutting expenses. But oftentimes looking at your suppliers and the terms that you have with your suppliers can be an easy way to free up free cash flow or get better terms or be able to even get different rates. But how do you go about actually negotiating those terms? How do you approach those suppliers, especially when the relationship is new? And if you're on the sell side, the same sort of questions apply. How do you approach suppliers in a way where you can increase your return on investment by negotiating better terms? Joe, I know you talked to someone about this and have some good tips here.
Yeah, Dan Ashburn from Titan Network. You know what? They just, in the podcast, I'll just tell you right now, Dan goes through a step-by-step process to basically walk people through what to do, how to do it, and get better terms with your supplier. And the ultimate result, whether you've got a straight up e-commerce business and a Shopify store or an Amazon business or whatever it might be, even retailers that are out there importing from overseas, I hear it over and over again that when you make the right connection in the right way with your supplier, you can get better terms. The end result is more cash flow. More cash flow means you've got the ability to buy more inventory as you try to keep up with growth, which is, you know, often a good problem to have. But Dan talks about it quite a bit in there. And the piece that, you know, is forgotten and not all that talked about is people are always trying to drive top line revenue. But if you can negotiate better terms with your supplier and then get a bit better reduction in cost of goods sold, it's going to boost your overall value as well. Hey folks, Joe Valley here from Quiet Light Brokerage. And today I've got Dan Ashburn on the line with me. Dan is the co-founder of Titan Network and I think China Magic as well, amongst a number of other pretty fancy titles and, you know, credits to your LinkedIn profile here that I'm looking at, Dan. But that's as far as I get with fancy introductions. So why don't you tell the folks that are listening about yourself and about your background and what you do?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me, Joe. So yeah, I'm the co-founder of Titan Network, a mastermind for Amazon sellers, co-founder and co-organizer of China Magic, which is the trip where we take 100 people twice a year to source products over in China. We've taken over 500 people now. I'm the co-creator, more recently, of Amazing Selling Machine. And then my team and I are responsible for delivering 8 figures in sales on Amazon per year through my brand management agency.
That's an awful lot. How do you do all that and not lose all your hair? You got a nice head of hair there. See, this is a plug for people to go to the YouTube channel as well.
Yeah, for sure. So I have a good team around me. I've got a good management team. I've got an executive assistant that makes me look really good. And then, yeah, just got good people around me. So it's pretty cool.
Okay. There's not a whole lot of Amazon sellers that we have on the podcast and that I deal with on a regular basis. You know, I've been doing this for 8 years that have a beautiful British accent. So tell me about that aspect of it. You've got, I don't know how many you said in terms of Amazon sellers, 1,600 that you work with or something like that. How many are typically US-based versus Europe-based?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'd still say the majority of the market is in the US. Okay. I'd probably say it's a 70-30 split right now. However, Europe is growing and it's growing fast. As markets like Germany, et cetera, pick up. And if you combine the combined sales volume of Europe to the US, then it's a good opportunity and Europe's definitely picking up. But a lot of the Europeans are obviously using US as their main channel, as a US seller would, and then coming out over into the European market to diversify.
Okay. So a quick side note before we get into the meat of this discussion is that Amazon has just made it a whole lot easier to transfer a European seller account. So that's real positive news. It doesn't necessarily have to be a stock sale anymore. It can be an asset sale and it's easy to transfer. So positive stuff there. But today we're talking about a little bit of your China magic experience and your China experience in general and negotiating terms with your suppliers to improve cash flow and to improve your bottom line and boost valuations, which is a breath of fresh air because you kind of, you wrote that line when we talked about it, because most people don't think about valuations when they're working with suppliers and things of that nature, but you do.
Yeah. So you've had Scott Dietz on a number of times now. Scott was very much a mentor of mine in over the last few years. And something Scott really instilled in me, what's good for selling your business is good for building and running your business. So installing that, combined with the challenge that I come across so many sellers have, there's one thing in this business that starves growth, and that's cash flow. It's cash on hand. We all know there's only three ways really to grow the business. Sell more of the same products, sell additional products, or sell the same products in new marketplaces. Really only the three ways. All three of those ways take cash and they take cash flow. So we very quickly, my team and I, really set our minds over the last couple of years towards how do we solve this problem for the accounts that we're involved in, the brands that we have stakes in, and the people that we're working with across Titan Network, China Magic, etc., to really solve this problem. And that's where this working with a supplier to fund that growth, that whole concept really came from. And I'm proud to say over the last year or so, last 18 months, we've been getting some pretty impressive results where suppliers are letting us go 0% down, 10% on shipment, 90%. 2-3 months thereafter. So it's really positive.
Well, one of the things I hear often is, yeah, I just got back from a trip from China. I was able to do this. I'm getting better terms here. I reduced my cost of goods sold here. I ate way too much and drank way too much. And I feel like I'm a member of their family now. Is that what everybody has to do? Do they have to get on a plane and go to China to meet the manufacturer and supplier? Or is it just something that helps, but there's other ways to do it?
There's always other ways to do it. You can get this done over a Skype call or a Zoom chat like we're having now. But if you're serious about growing the business and you want to go in and get the terms that you want, then every time in every case, physically being there in China, in the room, staring the person in the face, building a real relationship with that person gets the better result every time. And where we've had a good result virtually, it's always been as a result of following up physically with someone. So we've already been earlier in the year, or we maybe met them at the last Canton Fair, but there's always been that physical interaction. And I think what people underestimate about China is the business culture out there is relationship driven. It's all about building that relationship. It's all about going, having that meal, drinking some of the alcohol and stuff that they put in front of you to really build up that relationship. And there's so many benefits to that relationship, much further beyond payment terms and cost of goods sold, even down to stuff like it's coming up to Chinese New Year, their production's run is full. And because you have that relationship, they bump you to the front of the production line, which keeps you in stock.
Okay. Let's get to specifics for the audience then. For people that are, and talk to them as if maybe they're your clients, they may be somebody that you just bought an Amazon business from Quiet Light Brokerage, or they're somebody that listens and is getting expert advice from folks like you. What are the first few steps that somebody should take? And I know this is general information for general people. Specific would be if you were talking to one, but what do you advise somebody to do?
Okay, cool. So first off, we need to understand what terms do we need to achieve? And what are we aiming for? What's our goal? So the first step to sort of executing this process before you go out to China or before you attempt to do this virtually is we need to put together a sales forecast. We need to understand what am I expecting to sell over the next 12 months and include uplift for Q4 based on historical data. If you're selling seasonal products, make sure you're including all of that uptick. And then break down what you plan to order. So once you've forecasted those sales, understand what inventory requirements you have and what your current order rate would look like with your supplier over the course of that year. Then figure out with that information, what is the payout per unit on your sales? So you need to calculate the Amazon payout per unit after all fees and marketing costs. So within our brands, we work to an operating 10% advertising contribution or true ACOS, whatever you want to call it. And we factor all of that in and we figure out after storage fees and et cetera, what is our payout per unit?
Did you say 10% advertising? Is that what that was?
Yeah. So is it like a PPC contribution margin or a true ACOS, whatever you want to call it? Once we're out of the launch phase and we're into maintenance, we factor in a 10% margin for advertising content.
It's great. You know, we do key financial metrics anytime we list a business for sale and typically see the ad cost somewhere in that 8 to 12, 8 to 15% range. Yeah. So 10% is a good number. Before you go on too far, so you talked about doing a sales forecast. And of course that leads into inventory needs forecast. The question often comes up, what's the best software, if there is such software, for inventory management and sales forecasts? Do you use some or do you create it with Excel spreadsheets?
So we keep it simple. We do all of this in Google Sheets. We have adopted a new inventory management system that I'm pretty impressed with, if you want me to talk about that. But we do all of this in a basic Google Sheet template. And if you want, Joe, I can have that template sent out to your subscribers. But yeah, we just use a Google template. We use a Google Sheet and we're just manually plotting in numbers, manually forecasting out. It's nothing fancy. If we want to work with someone more advanced, then we'll obviously pull in an accountant or a bookkeeper, someone that's more savvy with the numbers. But we're just using historical data to forecast the future 12 months.
And you're pulling that data from Amazon or from QuickBooks? Where are you pulling it from?
Yeah, typically, depending on the account that we're working with or depending on whether it's an in-house brand or a joint venture type relationship, we will take the initial data from Amazon. So we'll take initial sort of sales data. And then if we can sanitize that data with actual sort of validated bookkeeping records, then obviously we will do that. But for the sake of this exercise, it doesn't need to be 100% accurate. This is a forecast. And everyone knows, I think what everyone gets is they get that analysis paralysis on forecasts.
Yeah.
Because they think, well, what if I don't meet the forecast? Or how do I know what it's going to sell? You've got to take a best guess. And if you haven't got 12 months of trailing data, go use tools like Keeper to look at your number one like-for-like competitors trailing 12 months of data. Just use data in the market to be able to inform your sort of forecast.
Okay. So doing a cash flow forecast, or I'm sorry, sales forecast leads into what your inventory needs are. You're doing that in Google Sheets. And what's next from there?
So before we can move on to the next stage, we then have to figure out what our payout per unit is, because these three pieces of data, the sales forecast, the inventory need forecast, as you call it, and then the payout per unit, factoring in a rough 10% advertising contribution, that gives us all the information that we need to be able to produce an accurate cash flow forecast. So what sellers I find are doing, most that aren't taking on external cash or external funding, they're kind of running on this system of hope. They kind of think or hope they'll have the cash in the bank for the next inventory order, but they're not really forecasting enough ahead to say, will I have enough cash on hand to be able to fund my next inventory order to meet demand of growth and not run out of stock at the same time? So, but without those three data points, without knowing how many you're going to sell, what inventory you need to meet that demand, and what your cash payout per unit is, you can't put together a cash flow forecast. So once you've got those three data points, we then put together a cash flow forecast. So to give you sort of a demonstration of this, we base it on our current terms. So let's say typical terms, 30% deposit, 70% before shipping. Yeah, that's pretty much most of the market.
Pretty standard.
Especially, yeah. So we'll forecast our cash flow based on those terms for the products that we want to negotiate. So you might have one product with a supplier, you might have 10, but you just do it for the group of products that you're talking about with the supplier. So we'll have the sales forecast at the top of that cash flow forecast. Then we'll have our payout forecast, which is based on the sales. It's just that payout per unit multiplied by the number of units we expect to sell in that month. That gives us our total cash payout for that given month. We then factor in some fixed costs. So things like employees, softwares, training, salaries, costs that we know we're always going to have. And then we might factor in some ad hoc costs like travel, conferences, going to China Magic twice a year, get that plug in there. So we factor in those hard costs. And then that gives us a forecast month by month, January through December, if we go for the annual calendar year, of what our cash on hand looks like. Then we just have to plug in, based on what we know we have to order, what cash output, what cash outlay do we need to factor in based on a 30-70 payment terms. That then gives us an accurate view of where we're going to have a deficit on cash, where we're going to be up on cash, and what that looks like for the next 12 months. That makes sense.
It does. You sound like a grown-up here running a business with real numbers and doing some analysis.
Trying to.
Congratulations.
Yeah, trying to.
And that's what you teach the folks at Titan Network as well. You're going through this with them. And do you produce video walkthroughs on how to do this with examples?
Yeah. So we got like the whole step-by-step. We got within Titan, we have something called masterclasses, and we've got an entire masterclass on supplier payment negotiation with all the templates, negotiation sort of scripts, ways of approaching. I'll give you some secret sauce in a minute, but even like a presentation that we use to present this information to the supplier.
Okay.
All of that's all inside of Titan. And our Titan members, I mean, the results that we're getting, someone got a 250 grand credit line off the back of this.
Wow.
We've got, I can't count how many now, it's got to be 20, 30 members in the last few months alone that are getting terms, even just improved terms like 20% down because the raw material costs are quite high, but then they're not paying 40% until 30 days after shipping, and the remaining 40% until 60 days after shipping, which means they've been selling the product lightly for 30 days before that balance is due, which just opens up so much opportunity because you can afford to sell more product because you can order more inventory. You can afford to expand into new markets because you can afford more inventory, or you can afford to launch new products. And for anyone that's doing some serious money in this business, they know launching products is the fastest way to grow it. So, yeah, I mean, the results are quite stellar and we're doing some good things in time for sure.
It's all good stuff. Everybody listening certainly needs to do it if they're not doing it now. So once you've got all this information, the forecast and estimates, things of that nature, what do you do with it?
So once we've created that cash flow forecast based on our current terms, so 30-70,
right,
we then
right.
produce a second forecast. And we play around with those terms. So the example I'm looking at as a reference in front of me here is 20% deposit, 35% 60 days after shipping, 45% 90 days after shipping. And this is actually a live case study on one of our ASINs that we run. So we will adjust the cash flow to the new terms to then demonstrate what that does for our cash flow. And this is all, at this point, this is all internal. This is all internal reporting preparation to support and enable the negotiation. So I know here, I'll read off some numbers because obviously I can't see the screen. On our 30-70, our cash on hand column across the bottom, January was, in this example, 5,000, February's 3,000, March goes into a 2,000 deficit, April goes into a 4,000 deficit because we've paid out that 30% deposit on this inventory order.
Can you, just with those numbers, do you have a ballpark total revenue figure as well? I'm just curious.
Yeah, we do. So down here, we got a total payout figure in this example because we haven't got the retail cost in here. We've tracked basically what cash will we receive from Amazon. So I haven't got a total on the end of the column, but it scales up. This was an example of a new product launch achieving 300 in the first month, up to 1,000 units in the 12th month.
Okay.
So very conservative forecast. Okay.
So what do you do? What happens when you flip this to the new terms that you're trying to achieve?
So interestingly, the cash outcome. So at this point, we're not forecasting what additional inventory we can get. So the cash outcome at the end is the same. So December, for instance, in the 30-70, that on this example, the cash outcome for December, or cash on hand, is 79,000. It started at 4,000. In the after state, the 20, 35, 45, again, it's 79,000 at the end of the year in terms of cash on hand. But the difference is I don't have a single deficit in my 12-month run because I've been able to achieve better payment terms.
Okay.
So that's sort of step one of this process, cash flow forecasting existing terms and seeing where your deficits are and then making sure that you can negotiate payment terms that mean you never run out of cash. You never need to go into any credit line, credit cards, any sort of equity or debt financing, because you're always going to have positive cash on hand to fund the growth of your business.
So what do you have to say to those people that are listening and say, okay, I got this, I'm just going to ask for these better terms at this point, and they don't do this work and they don't do a presentation the way that you want to, what is their supplier going to say?
It's funny actually, because one of the things we normally go to with this is a typical role play. And if I ever talk about this on a stage with Leiden or anything like that, this is how it typically goes. You send an email that goes, hey, I need some better terms. Can I pay you the balance after shipping? The supplier emails back, no. You sit there thinking, FML, like, what am I going to do? So most people just go, give me better terms. The supplier goes, no. And if you think about it, these factories, these suppliers, how many brands are asking them daily? How many of their customers, because they're supplying hundreds, if not thousands of customers, are just saying, give me better terms? I'd be sat there as a factory owner going, well, what's in it for me?
Right.
You've got to answer that question. You have to answer that question of what's in it for me. It's got to be a win-win relationship.
Let's get to it then. The next stage is, I mean, obviously you're seeing, so no deficits, which is great. Yeah. The entrepreneur's sleeping better at night. They've got a little more cash for themselves, but also cash to probably buy more inventory, which is what's in it for the vendor, right?
Absolutely. So with everything we do, we have to approach these relationships as a win-win deal. Having been to China more than a dozen times now, I've taken over 500 people. I've been involved in a number of these negotiations at lower levels and much higher levels. It is all about the relationship. It's all about the win-win. And you have to present what's in it for them. Why should they risk their workflow, their cash flow? Because essentially you're asking them to fund your business.
Right.
Why should they risk that? You have to create a win-win deal. So the outcome for everyone has to be a benefit. So the way we do that is there's a five-step process to presenting a win-win. And this is what we break down into a presentation, and we've got templates for, et cetera. So step one is the opportunity. And the conversation that you're trying to get across is there's a big opportunity to make more sales. That's kind of the message you're trying to get across. And the reason it's better to do this in person as well is you can take, if you've got like a logistics manager or a sourcing agent on the ground, all of our Titan members benefit from Titan sourcing. So we provide this to them on the fly. But yeah, if you've got that on the ground, you can then have that person translate, but also be like an internal ambassador for this process. So step one, the opportunity. There's a big opportunity to make more sales. Step two, the challenge. The challenge is I can't order enough inventory to fund and meet the demand of my growth because of cash flow. And that's the challenge that you need to communicate. You can't fund your growth because of cash flow. And that's limiting your ability to grow because your sales are outgrowing your cash. Impact, I lose sales. And this, as a result, the supplier, the factory that you're dealing with is going to get smaller orders. The solution is better terms so we can order more inventory. The whole objective here is better payment terms, more cash on hand, allowing you to order more inventory to grow faster, to compound that growth faster. The benefit, larger orders for the supplier, more sales for us. So that's kind of the five-step story that your supplier, your factory really needs to understand from this process.
Read them off. Yeah, you were just going to do it. Yeah. Read them off real quick one more time.
Opportunity, challenge, impact, solution, benefit. So they really need to understand each one of those points. And then we're going to break down exactly how we do that.
Okay. So I haven't been to China before and I want to ask you about that a little bit, but I know that there's benefits for the manufacturer because you're going to be placing more orders. What's their recourse if you don't pay on those notes? Or is the risk so low because you've been there, you've met with them, Russian building relationship?
So look, you're not going to get these sort of payment terms on your first order. We have, however, had a number of success stories on their first order, even just slight movements like 2080, sorry, on the payment terms, or a slight reduction in COGS because we're guaranteeing more orders. So we are getting some traction on first orders. Okay. This is more for sellers who are probably more your audience, Joe, who are sort of gearing towards exit, have got an established relationship. We find sort of the second to third order is kind of the sweet spot that you can start bringing this up. And if you bring it on early in the relationship, every time you place a bigger order, you can revisit these terms, you can revisit the relationship. So for the factory, yes, of course, there is risk involved, but they're weighing up the relationship with you. And there are other insurances and stuff that you can bring up without getting too technical. There are sort of ways of insuring the order and stuff, which can give a lot more confidence to the supplier, but we don't do that most of the time. It's just purely based on the relationship and your order history.
Okay. So any more steps after the five that you talked about there?
Yeah, there is. So that's the story we've got to present. But when it comes to actually presenting that, you've got to back that story with data. They have to believe you and they need to see the numbers for themselves to tick that logical box. You've ticked the emotional box. You've got the relationship. They believe your story. Now you've got to present the data to back your story. So the six-step process to presenting the win-win. One is the growth potential. Two is a product-by-product sales forecast. So you know that forecast we produced in the beginning? We're just going to take the sales aspect of it and present that in a nice presentation. We're going to then present the order values to meet that demand. And we're going to show them the before and after. We don't get into showing them the internal cash flow or the profit or anything like that. We just show them, if you on the current payment terms, this is what we can afford to order. On the new payment terms, this is what we can afford to order. And what they're going to see is an order of, say, I don't know, 5,000, 10,000 units. But with the new payment terms, I might be able to order 20, 25,000 units. So they're going to see a drastic change in the volume of units that you're able to order if they just work with you on the payment terms. Now, once we've done that, there's two other points. We always present what out of stock means. So most factories and suppliers don't really understand what it means when you're out of stock financially from a sales perspective. Sure, they're not producing, or they're being hammered. You're sort of getting on email, you're getting on Skype, you're doing your thing, saying, right, I need this order. Can you push it? Can you put it to the front of your production line? And you're sort of pressuring them. But because you're pressuring them so much, they're not really thinking about the impact on sales. So you can show the cost of being out of stock from a point of relaunching, lost sales velocity, lost growth. So maybe you've lost a couple of places in rank, which has actually brought your growth percentage down, the momentum of growth. And for them, they're not going to be getting as frequent orders because that volume's down, meaning you're not placing as bigger orders. So you can sort of present the loss to them as well, which is a nice sort of stick to underpin the whole thing. And then finally, you go, right, to solve this problem, this challenge, to order more from you and to recover or to defend against that potential loss of being out of stock, these are the payment terms I need. And you just present the data to back the story. And it's quite easy. There's a whole template towards it in terms of how we do that. You can use screenshots out of your Amazon Seller Central account to back the data. You can use Keeper screenshots. Within the presentation, you, as well as just sort of showing screenshots of a spreadsheet, you really want to be showing the sort of analytical graphs to back that data because it really gives that visual representation.
So for every 10 people that go through this process and try to renegotiate terms, they go through the full process, they do it right. They do the projections, yeah. They do everything you've talked about so far, which I think is 11 steps after they're doing the sales forecast. Do 9 out of 10 of them get better terms, or 10 out of 10, or 2 out of 10? What are the odds? Just put it into a realistic perspective for the audience.
So if you are already working with the supplier, you're already in communication, you're not just emailing.
Let's assume that somebody's been placing 2, 3, 4, 5 orders. A lot of people, if they haven't done this, they've been placing the order for 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. So that person, I would be as confident to say that 8 in 10 people will. I'm yet to come across a relationship of that stature that's established with good communication where you won't end up better off. Now, you might not get the terms that you want straight out the gate, but I guarantee if they value your business, which they should do by that point, you've got that relationship, you will end up off in a better place. So 90 to 100% of people will end up better off. 80% of people will execute to a point where it impacts cash flow, for sure.
This includes a trip to China. Because you're presenting it in person.
Yeah, this is like optimum. You've gone to China. Think about how many requests these factories and suppliers get from brands in the West as they see it. Asking. And then think about the percentage of people that actually get on a flight, fly to China, sit in the office, drink sake, and do all that good stuff. It's going to be like 98.2%. Mm-hmm. So who are they going to prioritize? They're going to prioritize that have shown real commitment. Business is about commitment. Business is about doing what you said you would do. And I think that's all this is. It's as simple as that.
Yeah. The 80%, of people that have established brands and can certainly, get better terms with these vendors. Are you seeing, obviously they're ordering more, and with higher volume orders comes lower cost of goods sold. How do you negotiate a lower cost of goods sold? Is it strictly volume based, or do you make that part of this overall presentation that you're looking for terms and lower COGS at certain levels?
Yeah. So what we do is we hold that conversation. So in any negotiation, you need the person you're negotiating with to say yes a few times. Yeah, you need to get them to agree, and we need to chip away at the yeses. So what we do is we hold that COGS conversation right until the end. So once we've gone through showing the growth potential, the product by product sales forecasts, showing the order values to meet the demand before and after, if they give us these terms, the impact of being out of stock, and then say, these are the payment terms we want. And always start higher, by the way, always start higher than you actually need, because there will always be a piece of negotiation. They will turn around and say, yes, hopefully that's the goal. They'll turn around and agree. It might not be what you want, but they might say, well, on this one, we'll give you this. And if you meet the demand, then on the next one, we'll give you this. And it might be a bit of an up curve. We then turn around and just say, so now I'm placing a bigger order. I get a better price, right? And you'll find about half the time, they'll smile and laugh at you and say yes. The other half of the time, they'll say, let's talk about that in the next order. But yeah, you have to put a bit of tongue in cheek in with it. You have to build the relationship, play on the relationship.
Is this done over dinner? Is it done over a desk? How do you see it most often done?
Typically, it would be done, in most cases, it's going to be over some sort of food environment. Some suppliers and factories will like to get the business done and then go for dinner. Most like to get the relationship piece in first. They want to sort of learn about you, your family. They want to give you some food, take you to lunch. And then during that process, we'll then bring it down to the conversation. Now, it's important to say it won't always happen there and then in the room. Mm-hmm. A lot of the time you'll present this, you'll throw in that thing at the end that says, so now I'm placing a bigger order. Do I get a better price, right? And be a bit cheeky with it. And a lot of the time they're going to turn around and go, well, look, we need to run our raw material costs. We need to look at our production workflow. We need to speak to our internal production manager. We'll get back to you within a few days. So depending on how long you're in China, it could be back when you're in America or back in Europe. You'll jump on Skype and they'll go, okay, cool. We've run the numbers. It makes sense. Yes, we can do that. So it kind of happens as like a bit of a fluid conversation during the social aspect. Sometimes you'll sit in an office and just get it done, but most of the time it'll be over some sort of lunch or something like that.
Gotcha. Okay. Any other steps that you want to review?
No, we're good. We're good. So it's really just remember it's a win-win. Do your internal prep. Like it's what they say is the success is in the preparation, success in the planning. Mm. Do your planning and then make sure you're presenting it in a way that presents it as a win to them. And yes, you can achieve this virtually over the internet, but you're going to have 100% better results. And if it's okay, Joe, I've got some examples here, actually.
Yeah.
So case study one, 30% deposit, 70% before shipping. After, 0% deposit, 100% 60 days after shipping. Case study two, and that was my...
That's a beautiful outcome. I can't imagine anybody would be upset about that.
No, it's cool. That was actually Leiden, my business partner, and Sarah, who's head of Titan Sourcing. They negotiated that one. And the next one was 30% deposit, 70% before shipping. After, we got 30% deposit because the raw material costs were quite high on this product, which you have to sort of work with them on. Okay. And then it was 20% before shipping. So we'd paid sort of 50%. And then we got 50% 30 days after arrival at Amazon FBA, which meant we had 30 days of sales before having to pay the remaining 50%. Case study three. 30% deposit, 70% unapproved inspection report. That was a bit of a, obviously a bit of a quality assurance thing there. Yeah. After, we got 20% deposit, 35% 60 days after shipping, 45% 90 days after shipping. So that was a nice one.
Yeah.
And then finally, fourth one, and I've got some bonus tips at the end if you want them, Joe. 20% deposit, 80% before shipping. That was the terms we had. So it was a bit nicer on the front end. After, we got 10% deposit, 40% on landing in the USA and 50% 60 days after landing.
Wow.
So these are typical. I can stand here and say now these are typical because these are just four case studies that we've done, but we've got a whole Titan network full of members that are doing the same.
Yeah, no, I want to hear about the bonus tips. I also want to hear briefly about China Magic, and maybe we can have Athena on to talk about it. Just let me ask, go ahead into the bonus tips and then I want to talk briefly about China Magic.
Right. Yeah, sure, because there's loads of benefits above and beyond, obviously, COGS and payment terms. Okay, so tips for success. Face-to-face always will produce a better result. It often pays for the trip, and that's what you got to think. If you're looking at a cost offset, you're often going to pay for the trip in the renegotiation. Always ask for more than you need, really important. You probably won't shake hands there. And then, as I said, make sure, if you can, to see the boss. You don't want to be waiting on a middle person or a middleman to then have to go and sort of do the translation. You want to be in front doing the deal with the boss. Before you go into that environment, before you even head out to China, if you've got a representative from that factory or you've got a sourcing agent that handles that relationship for you, then get them on side. So run through the presentation with them first so that when they're in the room, they've already done the thinking, they already understand it, and they can get the buy-in of the boss in the room. Consider consolidating your orders to one supplier. It gives you more buying power. And one thing we're a big fan of in Titan and China Magic is leveraging an outside advisor, because then you can play the whole good cop, bad cop. If you want to maintain the good relationship, you can bring in someone as like an external advisor to crack the whip a little bit, and you can call them your finance person. You can call them whatever you want to, but it allows you to do that. Remember that every relationship and supplier's cash flow is different. So you have to really, don't just tell them what you want, understand what they need and bring the two together. And it's often, this is counterintuitive, but it's often be willing to pay more to achieve the terms, especially in the beginning. So one thing you can do is if they're not budging, you can afford to give them a dollar bump or whatever here and there on a product to get them to nudge on the payment terms, which is still going to give you more cash on hand, and then come back to renegotiating the COGS once you're up at the higher volume because you've been able to fund the growth.
I like it.
And also, and take gifts as well. Take presents. It works.
What kind of presents?
It depends. Like, there's controversial views on this. I know. So Kian Golzari, for instance, he's sort of our expert on China magic, everything to do with sourcing and product development. Kian loves, he's from Scotland, he's from Edinburgh. He loves taking some Scottish whiskey with him. Okay. Other people take chocolate. There's the whole red envelope with some cash in it for their children, but that one's a bit more controversial. But yeah, my advice would be take something that's important, not important, but personal to you.
Personal.
And then that creates a talking point and it creates more of a relationship and a bond.
Okay. That sounds great. I think one of the most important thing I see people that are running great businesses and eventually sell them, they're great businesses, they're great for buyers, they have been to China and they always wind up with either better terms or better COGS. It sounds like a scary place to me though. I've never been. So is China a scary place?
It really isn't, you know. So when I first got involved in the early days with China Magic, I went out there as a guest speaker and then ended up becoming co-organizer with Athena. I thought the same, but when you land, it's if you think like Guangzhou, where the Canton Fair is, that's where we go. It's the biggest product sourcing fair in the world. I think the stats are about 5 million products on display during the Canton Fair. They're used to receiving hundreds of thousands, if not millions of Westerners through that fair over the course of 12 months. The airlines are efficient. The flights are cheap. I mean, from the US, the flights are $500. On a good day, it's $400. Wow. It's really cheap. That's for obviously economy. I got a first class ticket. I mean, first class pod for $2,000.
Wow.
So yeah, I mean, so it's cheap. We head out there. We're picked up by a nice, comfortable bus. We stay in the Four Seasons Hotel, which was rated Forbes best business hotel in the world, 2019, the one where we go. So they look after us. We've got 5 staff service and food, good internet. We then head over to the fair. This isn't a market, like there's other markets like Ewu and stuff, which are a bit more like rag markets. Canton Fair is a professional establishment. All of the suppliers there are paying serious money to have a booth at this fair. So if they don't speak English themselves, they'll employ English speaking representatives. So you can have a really good conversation there. Sometimes you have to work with a bit of the culture, and there is definitely cultural sort of barriers that you have to learn, like receiving a business card with 2 hands and showing that respect. It goes much further. And Kian covers all this in China Magic. Like, we go into depth, like we spend something like 4 hours just going into how to have a conversation with a supplier so that they know you're educated. But yeah, I mean, to cut a long story short, it really isn't. Like, I walk around in my shorts and my t-shirt. I go down and they've got little smoothie bars now on the streets by the hotel. It's quite a pleasant place.
Fantastic, fantastic. How do people learn more about Titan Network and then China Magic? And again, I think we ought to probably have somebody on for China Magic and what that event is all about, because it's, I don't know, it's the next step. I don't know if I would want to go on my own, and I assume that you would not recommend that you go with a group that does this on a regular basis. So tell us about how more people learn about Titan Network, and in particular, this cash flow management, renegotiation, all of the different steps that you've talked about.
Yeah, sure. So if you want to learn more about Titan Network, we're an invite-only membership organization for Amazon sellers. We're growing from strength to strength. And the thing about Titan Network is it's created by sellers for sellers. So it's not about any one person's success. It's not like a guru-led thing. You can learn it at titannetwork.com. That's where you go and learn about Titan Network. And if you feel like you want to find your tribe and your family, then take a look there and you can apply for Titan Network. If you want to learn more about China Magic, go to chinamagictrip.com. It's got the full trip details on it. But I'm going to give you access to a little special link. If you go to chinamagictrip.com/masterclass, so /masterclass, we go into a bit more depth on this payment term, supply negotiation stuff, and it's got a screen share so you can actually see some of the slides. And that's all up there free of charge, so you can go and take a look at that. But yeah, I'd love to do a follow-up about China Magic, bring Kian on, bring Athena on, and go into the depths of, like, not just payment terms and cash flow, but how do you build these relationships and how do you find these factories that you're not going to find on Alibaba? How do you improve the quality? How do you differentiate products in 2020? We could talk about a lot.
Well, I think it's a great service to the people that are Amazon sellers, or even just not Amazon sellers, right? Other people that sell off of Amazon need better terms as well.
Yeah, we're seeing Shopify sellers. We're seeing a lot of these influencers on sort of Instagram that are realizing they've got an audience. And if they apply a physical product to that audience, they're going to make money. We're seeing all these guys come along now, because it doesn't matter whether you're selling on Amazon or Shopify, physical products are physical products. And to your point about going alone, there are seasoned travelers out there that will have no issue in visiting China themselves. But for me, it's about a return on investment on my time. So if I can go with 75 like-minded sellers at a similar point in the journey, led by multiple 7 and 8 figure sellers, get shown 30 years worth of sourcing experience across Marty, Kian, myself, and the team in a couple of days to condense that learning period, get the cogs I need, payment terms I need, and every single evening mastermind for 4 hours a night on every single area of the business. That to me is a bigger return on my time than just going over to China myself. So that's kind of my view on it.
Yeah, if I was in the e-commerce world myself, I'd be in. I'd want to bring my son though, so he enjoys the world travel. Maybe in another life. I'm out of the e-commerce business myself. I'm an entrepreneur at Quiet Light Brokerage only. So listen, Dan, I appreciate all the time you spent here. I think it's great tips, great advice. And I know from experience that people that exit their business for the maximum value end up doing a lot of the things you've talked about. So thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no, there's just a final closing point there. We should tie this back to valuation. So people go, how does this make my business worth more? Well, I think I was just spinning off three reasons in my head and maybe cut this in. One, it's going to make you more attractive if you've got solid foundation relationships with your supply chain and you're not relying on Alibaba or some sourcing agent. Buyers want to know you've got the full foundation. Two, if you've got more margin, you've got more profit, bigger valuation. And three, if you've got better cash flow, more cash flow on hand, you can compound that growth faster, which means you achieve your valuation faster. So that's how this ties back to valuation.
Again, I say it and I'll stop saying it because Mark keeps correcting me. There's no fifth pillar. All of the things that you're talking about make you a better business person, somebody that others will trust because you're instilling confidence in them. That will bring you a better value as well. People, if they trust you, they're willing to pay more for your business. So Dan, great stuff. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Appreciate it, Joe. Thanks for the time.
Today's podcast was produced by Podcast Motor and the Quiet Light content team. If you have a suggestion for a future podcast, or if you want to guess the quote from the beginning of the show for a chance at getting a shout out on the pod, email us at podcast@quietlightbrokerage.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and subscribe to our YouTube channel and this show wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.